We talk a lot on this podcast about chess improvement, but when it comes to improving your hiring processes, Indeed is the platform you need. Indeed has over 350 million global monthly visitors, and it has a matching engine that helps you find quality work candidates fast. You can use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with your candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree that Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. Years ago, when I was running a chess teaching business, I found it hard to find good help, and I had to go through a lot of back and forth to even screen potential candidates. Indeed allows you to do those things efficiently in one place. Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences, so the more you use Indeed for hiring, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of Perpetual Chess will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility if you go to Indeed.com/chess. Just go to Indeed.com/chess right now, and you'll be supporting our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast, Indeed.com/chess. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm going to make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you want to get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of The Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play The Godfather now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
I'm Victoria Cash. Thanks for calling the Lucky Land Hotline. If you feel like you do the same thing every day, press 1. If you're ready to have some serious fun for the chance to redeem some serious prizes, press 2. We heard you loud and clear. So go to LuckyLandSlots.com right now and play over 100 social casino-style games for free. Get lucky today at LuckyLandSlots.com.
Available to players in the U.S., excluding Washington and Michigan. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Hello, everyone. I'm Ben Johnson, and this is the Perpetual Chess Podcast. On Perpetual Chess, I have weekly conversations with the chess world's best players, promoters, and educators about their lives, careers, current projects, and best practices. For more information, go to perpetualchesspod.com. So I'm here with Grandmaster Simon Williams, the People's Champion, the Ginger GM, with 11,000 YouTube subscribers and a peak rating of over 2,500. So, Simon, thanks for coming on.
It's a pleasure, Ben. Good to be here.
So, Simon and I go back a little bit. I met him in 2006 at the Reykjavik Open. I think tournaments like that are a little more common for Simon than for a fish like me. But first off, I just want to testify that Simon, I feel like he does a better job of projecting his personality online than a lot of chess players, and I'm here to vouch for his personality. He is what he appears to be. nice guy, friendly guy. We shared a pint or two together and had a good time, and Simon at least even played some good chess.
Well, occasionally have my moments, Ben. I mean, it was a really fun tournament. I mean, you mentioned a pint or two, but I'm sure there was a bottle of vodka at some point as well, wasn't there?
Yes, maybe. This is true. Yeah, and Brennivín, the Icelandic favorite. I don't remember if you tried that, but I was a fan.
Yeah, it was good stuff.
Go ahead.
I was saying, yeah, it was a really fun tournament. I can't even remember what year it was, but I remember there being lots of interesting characters from America over, and I remember you guys ordering pizza to your hotel room a couple of times, and Reykjavik's one of my favorite countries, so yeah. Just fond memories all around, really.
Yeah, Iceland is a great place, and that's a fun tournament, although you were just the ginger I am back then.
I was, yeah, just a ginger patzer, basically. I mean, maybe I'm the same now, but somehow I got that GM title next to my name as well. So
I definitely wouldn't go that far. You do a good job of playing the role of the everyman, but, 2,500 ratings don't grow on trees.
Yeah. I mean, it's hard being a chess player, but obviously I've played chess all my life. So, I got to GM strength and now do other things, really.
Yeah, and now you're doing an amazing job online with your educational content, and we will get to that. I usually like to start with some background, sort of origin story, as Jan Gustafsson called it. But I want to start with, for you, the origin story of Harry the H-Pawn. I've watched some of your videos, but not all, so if it's been explained, okay. I didn't catch it.
You know what? I've got absolutely no idea where it came from. I mean, I was playing Blitz one day, and I think I might have watched a Clint Eastwood film, something like that, you know, maybe Dirty Harry, and it just kind of popped into my brain. I mean, I might have subconsciously got it from somewhere else. It just seemed very appropriate for the H-Pawn, which I kind of managed to sacrifice in a number of my games to be called Harry for some reason, you know, like the Dirty Harry character, just throws himself in there at the deep end, maybe gives his life up now and again, but basically causes a lot of havoc. So, but I honestly don't know where it came from. Just slipped out of my mouth.
Well, I like it. And there's Barry as well, right?
There's Barry. Yeah, there's Barry the B-Pawn. We have, I believe, Cedric the C-Pawn. We have Derek the D-Pawn. Eddie the Eagle the E-Pawn. Freddie the F-Pawn. Gary the G-Pawn. And yeah, something like that.
Okay, we've got them all. I do have a philosophical question for you, and maybe this has also been covered in your videos, but if Gary the G-Pawn captures and moves to the H-file, does he become Harry, or is he still Gary?
I think you can say Gary becomes Gary with Harry inside him. Maybe takes over the body. I don't know. I haven't really thought about it. I think he's still Gary. Even though he slips over to another row, he remains Gary.
Although for the purposes of your video, that makes your job harder.
It does.
You have to track which pawn is it.
It can get really confusing, these pawn names. Definitely. Yes.
I don't think anyone's holding your feet to the fire, though, luckily.
No. It's all good fun.
Okay, well... So let's start by, now that we've got Harry out of the way, let's get to Simon. I know your dad was a chess player, right? And are your siblings chess players too?
Yeah, sure. I mean, my dad taught me chess. I guess a lot of people get into chess like that when I was quite young, about six. So he was a good player, very good player. I guess Elo rating, I guess it was about 2100, you know, which is pretty good. And I've got two brothers. I'm 36 now. My oldest brother is 55. There's quite a big age gap. Tony. And he gave up chess when he was about 20, but he was a really good player. He drew a Karpov.
Wow.
Okay, in a six-board simul, but everyone else lost, and that included Nigel Short and Danny King and all these people. He's beaten most of the top grandmasters in England when he was at that age. So he was one of the best players, but then he got married and went from there. The reason there's a big age gap, that my parents had a daughter, my sister, who died quite young, and she played a lot of chess, and that's why I was born. I was sort of the next kid down the line. And my other brother doesn't play much chess, but yeah, pretty much chess family. My mum plays a bit as well, so good history of it.
Okay, and you grew up outside of London, is that correct?
Yeah, about 1 hour from London in the Surrey countryside, a place called Farnham. So nice little place, good pubs and good countryside. So yeah.
Okay. And are you still there?
I'm not there anymore. I live quite near though. I live in a place called Godalming, which is near to Guildford. People might know Guildford for the cathedral, which was the cathedral seen in The Omen, which is one random bit of information. But quite near to the same area I was brought up in.
Okay. And growing up, you were a fairly top junior throughout your childhood. Is that correct?
Yeah, I'd say so. I mean, my age group in my country was quite strong. We had lots of other good players around the same age. I mean, it was me and another player, Richard Bates, who's an international master now. He generally go to the world championships, you know, junior world championships, and I get the second place for the European. Our age group around there was really strong. We had other players like Nicholas Pert, who was a bit younger than me. He actually won the World Under 18 Championships, which is a really tough title to win. He's a grandmaster now and still plays. So I was always there competing and stuff. I mean, I suppose I didn't really get that good until I was about 12, 13. And then something kind of clicked. And I've kind of always found with my chess that rather than doing a gradual increase, which maybe a lot of people do. Sometimes something clicks, and that's helped me sort of make a big jump forwards. And occasionally maybe things unclick and you go backwards as well, but we'll try to forget about them, I guess.
Yeah, not to mention the plateaus.
The plateaus can last forever if you're not careful as well. So, yeah. But, yeah, I mean, if anyone gets in a plateau, I'd recommend they just try something different. I mean, this is obviously a good bit of advice.
Different from chess or different approach?
Different approach or just play drafts like
right.
a banter.
Okay, no, yeah, just, it worked for him.
Yeah. Just give up chess and try something else totally.
Yeah, I wonder if I'll win the Rapid Championship if I do that.
It's
seems unlikely.
Wow, I mean, I was just before this, I was just watching a video. I was doing a rivals match with some guys from Denmark, and I saw a video of Ivanchuk, and it's amazing. I mean, as we speak, he's just won the Rapid World Championships, as you just mentioned, and they got this video of him playing drafts when the closing ceremony is going on with Jabava, my pronunciation might be wrong there, but very strong player. Then his name is called out halfway through the drafts game, and he has to run up to the podium. He quickly gets his gold medal, then he runs back to the drafts board to continue his game of drafts, which I just find really amusing.
That is very funny.
Yeah.
So were you taught mainly by your dad and your brother?
Mainly my dad. Yeah, that's the only coach I've ever had. My dad really, he taught me chess and taught me some openings, and my parents took me around to tournaments. So yeah, just my dad really.
Wow, yeah. That's good work by your dad.
Yeah, he helped me out a lot. So did my mum. By, you know, I mean, you have to when you're a chess player, you have to have like parents are really willing to give a lot away by taking you around, and my parents were brilliant doing that.
So. After, I know that the school system's a little bit different in Britain than the U.S., and we have listeners all over. So, but did you go to university after, do you call it high school in Britain? This is a side question, but I feel like I've stumbled through these conversations before with people from Great Britain, and I always forget the different terminology.
Yeah, I mean, pretty much, yeah. I mean, I don't know the terminology abroad either, to be honest, or the age gaps, but the way it works in England, you know, when you get to, well, when I was young, when you get to 16, you can decide to do a bit further education, which I suppose is, we call college over here, or A-levels, you know, that's the qualification you can do until the age of 18. And then at the age of 18, you can then decide if you got good enough grades to go on to university, which I did. I took a year off when I was about 18, moved to London, and then when I was about 20, I went to university down in Sussex University down in Brighton on the southern tip of England, and I was doing a three-year course, but it took me about 5 years to finish, shall we say. So a bit of a misspent youth down there, but nice. I yeah, it was good fun. You got to enjoy these times, haven't you? And
yes.
You know, 5 years at university. Well, I did a year work when I was down there. Four years of sort of getting my degree done and having a great time. And I didn't play so much chess in that period of time.
And what did you study besides the pubs and the raves?
Well, I would say I definitely got a first class degree in the pubs and the raves. There was some really good raves down there, but I studied philosophy as my major, and I did that with cognitive studies. So yeah, that was my degree.
Okay, and then when did you circle back towards chess?
Well, I guess after university finished, you know, I thought I'd better, I'm trying to make some money somehow, and I started teaching chess. I am strength at the time, and I taught in schools mainly, which can be quite good money around where I was then. And I did that for about, I guess, 6-7 years. And I started playing a bit more around that time. And yeah, I just got my grandmaster title at the age of 28, I think it was. So a bit late. But yeah, that got me back into chess. And, you know, it's an enjoyable way to make a living, really.
So were the schools in London where you taught?
They were mainly, I moved back from the Brighton area back to where my parents are based, so around Surrey, which is a bit south of London. So that's mainly where I was teaching, around the Surrey area, around that area. And I did a bit of teaching in London as well, but mainly in Surrey.
And are there scholastic chess programs throughout England or concentrated in certain areas?
I would honestly say that chess development in England's pretty bad. You know, I mean, you see the boom that you guys are having in America, and it's great. You know, you won the Chess Olympiad this year, and you seem to have, I don't know much about Webster University, but you see they win everything, and I don't know if they buy all the good players. I don't know how it works, but they seem to do well. And but generally, you have a lot of good players coming through in America and other European countries. But in England, unfortunately, I mean, there doesn't, you know, people are trying to do stuff. I say Andrew Martin at the moment. Michael Basman, who's famous for his wacky openings, helped chess a lot. But in general, there's not really enough support for promising kids. And one of the reasons I stopped teaching, at world and European events, I found that it was quite elitist. And the children that were going to playing and representing in England, it was mainly the parents who had the most money rather than the kids who were talented. And that kind of, you know, should we say, pissed me off a little bit. Yeah. So. Yeah.
Well, there's some of that in the U.S. too. The U.S., I do feel like it's in the past 10 to 15 years, it's booming, and certainly at the top level now with the Olympiad team we're able to field and such. But I do feel like England has a great tradition of homegrown talent. Like I was just looking at like the U.S., if you look at the top 2025 list, and this was even more true 10 years ago, 15 years ago, most of the players weren't born in the U.S., so we had strong players, but they came here. Whereas England, my impression is that the strongest players actually come from England, so they must be learning somewhere.
Yeah, I mean, I do agree with that. I mean, but I think this is going back, I guess, to the 70s around then, maybe the 80s, 90s going through. We had one of the best chess nations, you know, in the world, just behind Russia at one point. We had the likes of Tony Miles, who was the first ever English grandmaster. And, you know, there's a number of big names there. And also really interesting chess players. They had quite a unique style. If you take Jonathan Spielman, he very unique player. John Nunn, great tactician. And then you've got, you know, of course, the likes of Mickey Adams, who is England's number one now, Nigel Short. And they're all homegrown talent. But now it just seems the last 20 years is dying off a little bit. If you look at any, I don't think we have any grandmasters under the age of 20. And I'm not really sure if it's the Federation to blame, probably partly. Or maybe just also it seems to be in general in England and maybe other places there's this dumbing down. It's good to be dumb, you know, generally in media. And if you're considered to be a chess player, you know, an intellectual chess player, it's actually a bad thing because you're using your brain to do something good. And general population kind of thinks this is not a good thing to do nowadays. And that's it's a bit sad, you know, that this is the way, you know, that things maybe are going.
Yeah, that could be one area where the U.S. is starting to stand out a little bit. I mean, chess is never going to have the same reputation as a sport like football or basketball or something like that. But I think here it's become more acceptable recently, not less acceptable. But, you know, I think these things go in cycles everywhere. So
I guess so.
So moving forward, you switched from teaching chess in schools, and now you've built up quite an online following. Like I said, 11,000 YouTube subscribers. You have some of the most entertaining videos online. So how did you transition into that?
First started maybe me doing commentary work when I commentated live at the Gibraltar competition, which is one of the best opens in the world. And my friend Grandmaster Stuart Conquest used to be the commentator there, and he asked me if I wanted to do that. And also, I mean, bizarrely enough, I mean, I think some of my best ideas have occurred in the pub. And I remember getting drunk with a friend of mine who's sort of a chess player, Gary O'Grady, who I met at 3 o'clock in the morning at a chess tournament. And we were drinking, we were a bit drunk, and we came up with the idea of starting a company making chess DVDs, you know, which is now Ginger GM. And also my friend Simon Ansell, who also runs Ginger GM, came up with the name, you know, of the company. So it's really the three of us who sort of started this. And We made a DVD on the Dutch, the classical Dutch, all those years ago, and somehow got some products out there. And then, I mean, recently with the YouTube stuff and everything else, it was chess.com, I have to say, really helped me. I contacted them about work, and they've been brilliant. They've given me loads of work, and I do lots of videos for them, live commentary. I also work for Chess Space, do DVDs for them. So, yeah, it's just really sort of grown, and hopefully it will continue to grow in the future as well.
Yeah, well, I mean, I think you, like, as you have a unique approach, and I think it resonates with people. I'm curious about the business side of producing a DVD. Was it a challenging learning curve figuring out how to get them printed and, like, at a cost effective way, and how to sell and distribute them and all of the stuff like that?
Yeah, I mean, completely. It's like starting anything new. I mean, the idea of coming up with making some DVDs down the pub and then actually making it happen is two quite different steps. And you know, luckily my friend knew someone who used to film for the BBC, so we got in contact with him, and he had a little shed down the bottom of his garden, which he made into a studio. Then we had to get some editors on board, and then we had to work out how to make it, you know, and take a risk financially, because we didn't have much money at all. And yeah, it was just a learning curve, and still is. You know, we're still obviously trying to make things as good as we can. That's our motto, try to improve all the time and make things better as we go along. But it's fun. I mean, I could be doing loads of other stuff, and, like, you know, making chess DVDs, talking about chess, and kind of, you know, I am just being myself when I do the YouTube stuff. And with the company, I do try to help people, you know, learn in a fun way. But, you know, I can, you know, I'm lucky. I'm very lucky to be doing what I'm doing.
Yeah, and we're talking about, like, 6 to 8 hour DVDs. I mean, I'm sure there's a lot of work involved.
Yeah, it's loads of work. I mean, preparing for the DVDs is a massive undertaking, because you don't want to be recommending a load of rubbish. And, you know, then editing the DVD, everything. It's a lot of work, yeah, time-consuming.
And do you primarily use ChessBase to figure out lines and stuff like that?
Yeah, I mean, if I'm actually preparing the work as such, I normally only do DVDs on, you know, should we say, areas that I'm very comfortable with. So my specialist openings I've been studying a lot. And I think every chess player who is serious about their game playing competitions will generally use ChessBase, their software. That's kind of high level software. So I prepare most of my stuff with them, and then use the chess.com server as the interface, because their graphics I find very good. And, you know, you have to contact all these people, make sure it's okay to use their stuff, and deal and wheel and all sorts of stuff. So yeah, it's all good.
And are you I gather you're using the engine a lot in your preparation, in addition to just studying the Grandmaster games?
Yeah, I mean, you know, when I play tournaments, you know, the best way to prepare nowadays, you have to have the database, your mobile computer, and you have to nowadays use the engine a lot, you know. And I have to say, this is one thing that kind of puts me off the modern game. Okay, I mean, it's put me off as good and bad about everything, and it's bad that you have to rely on the computer and really memorize what the computer says in order to become a good player. And that's why you see so many youngsters nowadays making incredible leaps in Elo rating, becoming grandmasters at such a young age, because they can just absorb so much information quickly. I'd rather it just relied on talent, and you don't have to spend all your life memorizing lines. But of course, the other side is I've got YouTube, I've got my company, so I can't complain too much, because without computers I wouldn't be able to produce the videos. So it's kind of like, you know, you gotta love them and hate them, really.
Yeah, we want to keep only the good things from computers.
Yeah, maybe life in general, so right. But it's not possible.
So are you an advocate of Fisher Random Chess or something like that in order to lighten the workload on openings?
I'm not so much. I mean, I think what I would kind of propose is, well, for me personally, I played a tournament, the London Classic, recently, and I like rapid play, which is about half an hour each for all moves. So, you know, the game is over in an hour. I think that's a good time limit. You can still think make calculations, but it's not just on random moves. And what they did at the London Classic, they only put the pairings of who you're playing up about 2 minutes before the game started. And I don't think anyone's really discussed this, but I really like that idea, because no one, you know, in a normal tournament where it's one game a day, you'd know who you're playing the day before. And some people could spend 5 hours just preparing for their opponents. But if you only get your opponent a couple of minutes before the game, then you've no idea what they're going to play. So you don't have to prepare. You can just turn up and play. And I enjoyed that quite. I enjoyed playing that tournament.
Yeah, although depending on the size of the tournament, people will often have a pretty good guess who they're playing.
Yeah, there are problems with it, of course, because you can maybe work out who you're playing and stuff like this. I mean, it maybe only work in a rapid event, not sure about one game a day event. I mean, I think in America it's a bit different, I hear, because, you know, you get more games in the day, but generally in Europe it's one game a day. Never been to America, though. Maybe another time.
Yeah, come on down.
I will do, definitely.
Okay, so after you latched on with chess.com, you also started posting on YouTube. When did you start doing that?
You know what, I'm not even sure, to be honest. Maybe a year and a half ago, 2 years ago, something like this on YouTube. I don't know the exact date. And I think one of the reasons I actually started, it was quite strange, is that I used to play a lot of blitz chess, you know, and I'd often play, you know, the legendary players, King's Crusher and Chess Explained, who had been streaming, got a great YouTube channel, and they've had it for a number of years. And I think I can remember losing to King's Crusher a couple of times. And then, you know, a couple of people then contact me the next day and saying, oh, look, I found your video where King's Crusher, you know, spanked you. Mm-hmm. And I was like, oh, my word. So, you know, I'd have to, I put the video on, and I have to watch myself getting defeated convincingly by King's Crusher. And I thought, right, I'm going to make my own channel so I can maybe give these guys a game and show when I win. You know, that was my weird thinking. And also, it just sounded like a fun thing to do. So that's kind of how I got started with that.
And in basketball, when they dunk on you, they call it being posterized.
Posterized, okay.
You got posterized by King's Crusher.
I got posterized by King's Crusher too many times. So
now you're doing some posterizing of your own, luckily.
Yeah, it's good to get a bit of posterizing back, I guess. And I mean, it's a funny story. I do remember King's Crusher. He's a really lovely guy. I mean, I think that comes across in his videos. And I remember playing him in a tournament when I was only about 12 or 13 years old, and it was the London Under 18 Championships, and he's a bit older than me, so at the time he was maybe 17, I was 13, and we were playing this game, and he was completely winning, and it was clear, you know, I was going to resign, but then he got up and he started walking around the room, you know, doing a bit of posterizing, whatever it is, and right. looking quite confident, and I thought, right, okay, while he's not looking, I'm gonna place his king in checkmate and just see what he does, you know. So he was walking around the room, and I should we say cheated, and I placed a checkmate position on the board. And when he got back to the board, I said checkmate, and you know, he jumped a mile, and he nearly had a panic attack, and like, you know, obviously very quickly I said, look, I'm only joking, I resign, before you know, he right. got committed to hospital or something. But you know, it was a little amusing way to resign, shall we say, but maybe I wouldn't do that nowadays, you know. So yeah.
And I was watching your New Year's YouTube video, and you mentioned you're looking to grow your YouTube subscriber base, so that made me wonder, is it becoming a source of revenue for you, or is it more just like a game where you're trying to run the video game score up sort of thing?
It's not. YouTube hasn't made me any, should we say, money directly, but because of my company, Ginger GM, I'm finding that if people like my videos, rather than, you know, donating money, which I think is the main way other people get through, they can actually buy a product from Ginger GM. And that's a great way to support me, you know, because, you know, if you buy one of my DVDs for £8-9, you can get 8 hours of tuition from me downloaded directly to your computer. So it's helped it in that way. It's helped me, you know, generate some money to keep the company going. And that means I can make more products in future, get more people to make more DVDs and maybe make a living out of it as well. I mean, at the moment it's not able to do that, but you never know. It's fun and it gives me potential for the future. So, and I enjoy it. You know, I enjoy playing Blitz. I enjoy the stuff I do on YouTube. So why not record doing it, you know, and kind of share that with everyone else out there. You know, I say enjoy it. When I get beaten in these rivals matches, you'll probably see the dark side of me come out as well. But, you know, that's maybe half the fun, to see the pain as well as the good side.
Yeah, I think anyone who plays chess learns to deal with losing, some better than others. So it's always
indeed, yeah.
Always fun to see how a professional approaches it.
Pretty badly, I'd say. I've been losing quite a lot recently as well, so even worse recently, but there you go. It's the way of life.
So do you still do any teaching in person?
I don't, actually. Not anymore. You know, I did it for 7-8 years of my life. I did one-on-one tuition, and you know, it's nice to always try to evolve a bit and try other things out. So at the moment, because just time limitations, I've decided to stop teaching and concentrate my efforts on videos and commentary and try to make that work, which obviously takes up a lot of time and effort.
And do you feel like it's working?
Yeah, I guess so. I mean, as long as I can pay the rent, that's the main thing, really. You know, pay the rent and have fun doing it, then that helps. And that's what's happening. You know, I enjoy doing it. And so far, the rent's been paid. So all good.
Well, that's good to hear.
Yeah.
And obviously on your YouTube videos and in person, you talk a lot about going to the pub. I was curious if you have a go-to pub or if you're mixing it up.
Well, it depends where I am. Right? I mean, like, you know, I mean, where I live, there's certainly a pub I generally go to called the Star in Godalming, and I often, you know, just meet a couple of friends down there who also, you know, have, you know, chess players and non-chess players alike. And pubs in England are pretty cool, you know. They are like the meeting point of the village, and they've got some great beers over here, and it's just nice to go down the pub, you know. I mean, I think it's like one of the main things English people do, go down the pub, it seems to be, and it's just a social thing. So I certainly do have a favorite pub, and it seems to be a hobby of mine, maybe a bit too much occasionally.
Are you ever going to have a YouTube video live from the pub?
Yeah, sure. Why not? You know, well, yeah, we should try that, you know, yeah, if the pub allows.
I think your followers would like that. I mean, you could, you know, you could play online if there's wireless, or just actual Blitz with an actual person.
Let's do it. I actually like that. Yeah, I mean, recently I played John Bartholomew, you know, lovely guy, great YouTuber as well, and we played him in a Blitz tournament in London, and it was kind of in a pub environment, and I think he was on the orange juice by the time I played him. It was like a 14-round Blitz, and I think I played him around 10, and I probably had the same amount of drinks, and it was quite an interesting game. But yeah, I mean, yes, we did do that, and that was recorded, so hopefully we'll be able to get that footage out there so people can watch it as well.
Nice, yeah.
Basically me getting beaten by John as usual.
He's a tough tough customer.
He's a great player. His YouTube channel's brilliant. You know, he does some great tuition, and you know, I can't say sing his praises enough.
It was very funny when you played the match with him and called it, what was it, the robot versus the animal?
Yeah. Well, that was a friend of mine came up with that saying. Stefan from Belgium, actually, has been following. He came up with that in the graphics, and you know, it was kind of, I don't know. We've got very different playing styles, basically. So that came across in the chess, and I think made it a very fun match.
Yeah. Unfortunately, I didn't get to watch the whole thing, but I did enjoy what I saw. So you're not. I saw in a tweet or something, you were talking about the London Open, and you basically said your emphasis is much more on teaching than playing at this point. Is that accurate?
Yeah, I mean, teaching through commentary and through videos, mainly. I mean, I still like to play, but, you know, actually playing requires an enormous amount of effort and work and time, you know, to keep up with the latest developments. And, you know, to actually make a living playing chess, you know, I just admire anyone who can do that simply by playing chess. It's incredibly difficult to do. I mean, especially if you live in like a Western European country, because the price of living in a country like England is so high, you've got to raise so much money just to pay the rent. And for me, I'd like to play more, but I don't really have time to do that at the moment because there's more important things to concentrate on.
Yeah, it seems like it's very hard to. It seems like it might be easier to balance like a job outside of chess and playing the occasional tournament with teaching chess, and as opposed to teaching chess and playing.
Yeah, I mean, it's strange. I mean, I love the commentary, and I enjoy what I do, but you know, sometimes you do get a bit sick of seeing the board all the time, you know. Hence why the pub is a great right. way to escape, you know. I don't want to do chess all day every day and then go and play a tournament. You know, when you play chess, it's so important to have that energy and enjoy playing and love playing. And you know, I still have that, but you know, you've got to make sure you really do want to be there and you want to be at your best. And at the moment, I don't quite have that as much as I'd like to, so maybe in the future again.
And when you were playing a lot, I feel like you got to travel a decent amount. As we mentioned, I met you in Reykjavik. Do you have a favorite place of all the places you played a tournament?
Yeah, I mean, it probably is Reykjavik, to be honest. I mean, I'm very lucky with the places I've been playing chess. I mean, America's probably one of the only places I haven't got to, maybe Australia as well. But, you know, I've traveled around Europe, been to places like India playing. It's the places and it's the people, you know. The people you meet, normally other chess players, all very interesting. You share something you love doing. And it's been great. And I think Reykjavik has for a number of reasons, been my favorite place. I'd say because of the people. The people are so friendly in Iceland. I kind of like the rugged landscape over there. It's really quite a nice place. You can escape. You've got great nightlife, but then you can escape in the country and have complete quietness. So it's certainly one of my favorite places, Iceland. I mean, what was your impression, Ben, when you were there?
I loved it. I unfortunately didn't get to go see the moonscape that is the rest of the country. I just stayed in the city.
Sure.
But I also had an amazing time. I mean, the people, as you say, were so friendly. The conditions were good. I would definitely recommend it to anyone considering a chess vacation.
And also, you've got a funny story. I don't know if you've mentioned it here before, but you know, you went to poker after that, you and your friend. And I remember in Iceland with you, we were all sitting around drinking. And then I don't know how many years it was later, about 6 years later, I turned on the TV and you know, your friend was on the final table of the World Series. So, I mean, maybe you should share that with everyone as well.
Yes, FIDE master Elon Schwartz. Yeah, that was funny. I mean, you and a couple other people at that time, poker was, it can now be said, basically in a bubble. At the time, they just, a lot of not very good players playing online and, you know, playing in tournaments. So Elon and I both were fairly deep in that lifestyle, making a really good living for being in our 20s, being young and single. And you and a couple other people kept saying, you know, it's bad, it's gambling, it's bad. And we're like, yeah, you know, gambling is bad, but you don't understand. And then Elon won $4 million 2 years later.
I know, yeah. But I should definitely eat my words there if I said that. I
mean, well, it was the exception that proves the rule. I think now it would be, once again, it was good advice 10 years before then, and to avoid gambling and, you know, basically avoid poker unless you're willing to devote every fiber of your mental energy to it. And it's good advice again, I think, but at that particular moment it wasn't the best advice.
No, certainly not. And it was just amazing seeing, you know, Eli on the final table, and it was great. You know, it was brilliant to see, you know. And also, you know, I'm sure you've done well out of it as well, so I'm happy for both of you, honestly.
Oh,
it's great.
Yeah, I'm
glad it worked.
There's chess and poker players all over the world. It was a fairly easy transition for a while, but like I said, now I think they're getting back to relatively equal footing. And I do like chess better.
Yeah, I mean, my the person who runs Ginger Jam with me, Simon Ansell, who's an international master, he was a poker pro, you know, supernova elite for a number of years, and we used to play a lot of poker together. I mean, I've played a lot of poker, but too many good players nowadays, so it's one of those things where I guess timing is a key thing as well, I guess.
Yeah, the true test is to find the next poker, but...
Yeah.
Personally, I think I'll stick with chess for a while.
Yeah, it's a better game. It's a better game.
Yeah, for sure. So do you have any... I mean, you must... You're very well connected in the chess world as a friendly guy, and, you know, I watched your video where you played Magnus Carlsen in 2005. Do you have any standout stories or highlights from your career that you'd like to share? I feel like you have so many stories that slowly trickle out on your YouTube videos.
Yeah, I mean, it's just been some, you know, I've been through a lot, seen some very interesting things in the chess world. I mean, I can't probably share them all, you know, here over the thing. Maybe, you know, maybe if you brought me 5 pints down the start pub, I might share it with you. But, you know, in general, I think the chess world is a great place because you get such a range of people from different lives and different lifestyles, different ages, different everything. And, you know, it's great to meet such a wide range of people and personalities. And, you know, I've seen loads of crazy stuff. You know, chess players have been known to drink too much at times and do other things. Maybe they can be quite excessive characters. So, you know, you can imagine some of the players I've seen in some of the positions I've seen them, but I probably won't share too many of them here. And thinking them off the top of my head, there's just too many, Ben. There's too many out there. So.
And we don't want you to lose any friends, so.
Oh, I got
But yeah, I think chess is a lifestyle that in order to excel at it, it requires excess. You have to work basically too hard at it. So it attracts a certain type of personality that in other aspects of life can also be prone to excess.
I totally agree, actually. I mean, it's very interesting to think about the personalities of play chess. And you often, I think you've kind of hit the nail on the head there. And a lot of times to be a top chess player, it's just such a hard mental game, and you really have to be a warrior mentally. And when you're thinking so hard for such a long period of time, and you're not guaranteed for things to work, you could lose the game. You need to let loose as well. You really need to sometimes have the opposite. You need to go and do something to take your mind off it, and just have distraction, or it can drive you crazy. You know, I mean, chess has driven many of people crazy, I think. If you can't release that energy you put into it. I mean, what was the saying? It was something, one of my favorite sayings was, you know, chess doesn't make people go mad. Chess keeps mad people sane,
right.
I think. It was just something like that, you know, which it can be quite appropriate at top level.
Yeah, it's a fun game if you can find the right balance.
Certainly.
So getting back to your current project, you've got a DVD coming out next month. Is that correct?
I mean, with Ginger Jam, the company I work for, is at the moment working on a DVD with Swedish Grandmaster Tiger Hillert Persson. And he's the world's leading specialist on a line against E4 called Tiger's Modern. He came over and filmed for us. He's a really nice guy. And we're trying to get that DVD released as quickly as possible. I've filmed some DVDs for Chessbase, which are also in the pipeline. So I've done a DVD on the London system and on the Shugorin. So those DVDs should be coming out through Chessbase as well. So, yeah, it's constant sort of creating stuff. And, you know, I do, don't get me wrong, I do love creating stuff, and I do love looking at these openings in a way to learn. And I think my main thing is most of the people who buy my DVDs, I try to bridge the gap between relatively amateur players all the way up to strong competitive players. You know, I want the amateur players to learn bits, but I want the strong players who buy the DVD to appreciate some of the lines I'm given as well, which is a tough task, but you know, it's something which I've been doing for a while now, I guess. So hopefully I do it okay.
Yeah, well, I mean, with the like I said, the length of the DVD, it does seem like you can cover it in a depth that suits people of all levels.
Yeah, and you've got to try to make it fun as well. I mean, I think another thing, you know, if the chess players are listening to this and they're wondering, why am I not improving, you've got to find the best way to learn. I mean, some people, books will work brilliantly to learn, but other people, there's literally no point buying a chess book. And I'm probably in the category where I learned a lot from watching chess videos. And nowadays, there's so much stuff online. You can play Blitz, you can do tactics online. You've got to find a way of learning which suits you. And videos can be a great way of doing that, I think. You can lay in bed and watch a video. I mean, that's pretty cool way to learn, I think.
Yeah, the actual, when reading a book, the bar of getting out the chess set is quite high.
Like, yeah,
it's one thing, you know, I'm decent at chess, but I can't follow a whole game in my head, certainly not if I have distractions. So,
yeah
it's, my cutoff generally is, okay, do I have to sit upright?
Yeah.
And if I do, I'd rather watch a video or something.
Yeah, that's the thing. I mean, even when I was young and I was really eager and I wanted to learn, I mean, I would get the board out and I would get the book out. But, you know, I'd probably get bored of doing that. I'd rather read a tactics book in the bath, you know, or something like that. And that probably helped me more than working in what people may consider a more astute way with the board, with the book. It just doesn't work for some people. So you have to find a way of learning which works for you.
And speaking of a way of learning, I only have a couple more questions, but I wanted to talk about your chess style. I feel like you have a pretty original approach to chess, and you do a good job finding openings that can help your students sort of cultivate that style. So was this like a conscious thing, or just following your heart as it comes to chess?
I mean, I never planned to have the style I have. It's not something I ever set out to say I'm going to be this kind of character. It's really just the way I naturally think about the game, for better or worse. I mean, I've got this style of being an extremely aggressive player who always takes risks. And, you know, in some ways this can work well, but it can be, a demon as well. Because I think to be a GM, you have to be good at every area of the game. You have to be good at endings, positional chess. But, you know, mainly this is kind of a double-headed monster, this aggressive style I have. It can work beautifully, and it's something that's helped me game Grandmaster. And I want to share that, because it is quite a unique way of playing. It's a super aggressive way of playing. Attack, 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 keep the pressure on. And it can work brilliantly. Also, you have to be careful with his style as well. I guess like anything, you know. But it's fun. It's a fun. I find it fun. So that's the way. You should play in the style you find the most fun to play in.
Well said. Yeah, I agree. I can't think of any other questions. Do you have anything else you want to touch on?
I don't think so. No. Just, you know, thank you to you, Ben. Thanks. And obviously, best of luck with this show in the future. And thanks, everyone, for listening. I'll do a little plug, you know, well,
oh, of course.
Plugged it enough really,
yeah.
But you know, if you do want to check out my things, go to gingergm.com. You know, you can find my YouTube channel, do lots of stuff for chess.com and streaming and all the rest of it. Very easy to find, and hopefully I can continue to do that. You know, I've done something like 7 chess books as well, but yeah, no, long may it continue. Let's hope.
Yes, I think it will. And I want to second that call for supporting Simon. He's one of the good guys in chess, so please subscribe to his YouTube channel, buy his comedy album, buy his DVDs. He's a good guy and entertaining to watch. So keep up the good work, Simon, and thank you for coming on.
That means I'll have to buy you a beer now, Ben.
I don't know if I can make it to Iceland again, though.
Now you've got 2 kids. It might be more different. Yeah?
They might not approve.
No. Good. Well, thanks a lot, Ben.
Okay. Take care, Simon.
Thanks for listening to Perpetual Chess. To hear more episodes, give feedback, or suggest guests, go to perpetualchesspod.com. If you like the show, please help me out by telling your friends and giving me a high rating on iTunes. I'll be back next week with another episode of the Perpetual Chess Podcast.
Sports Social Podcast Network. Hey guys, it is Ryan. I'm not sure if you know this about me, but I'm a bit of a fun fanatic when I can. I like to work, but I like fun too. It's a thing. And now the truth is out there. I can tell you about my favorite place to have fun. Chumba Casino. They have hundreds of social casino style games to choose from with new games released each week. You can play for free anytime, anywhere. And each day brings a new chance to collect daily bonuses. So join me in the fun. Sign up now at chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.